Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
If these liberal judges, like this liberal judge in Missoula, Montana, if they can't even figure out which bathroom to use, what else are they getting wrong? Oh, there's a lot. We all know this. So we'll talk about that. Plus, is there a uniparty in Helena in the state legislature? We've talked about the uniparty in Congress. What about the uniparty in Helena? That and more. We've got Montana's Senate President Matt Regeer, the Republican out of Kalispell, with us here for our weekly legislative update. Mr. President, great to have you on the show.
Hey, good morning, Aaron, and good morning, Montana. Great day to be in Montana, no matter what's happening in politics.
Right? Hey, we're so blessed to be here. That is for sure. That's for sure. Well, how are things in Helena? I want to talk about the budget and much more, but what's going on in the legislature this week, aside from, you know, the big story about the censure vote on the former Senate president in particular?
Yeah, I mean, those antics aside here, it's, I mean, every session that comes to this time, we've only got a few weeks left, praise the Lord. And we're moving here to the end of that, and everything's got, we got to put a bow on the budget and get that passed and through, and then wrap up all the cat and dog bills that do cost money and fit that within our expected revenues. And the expected revenues, the big thing on that is, obviously, we talked before, is tax relief, income tax relief, and property tax relief. So how do you fit that in with all the bills and the spending that legislators want to do along with the budget? This is the pressure cooker at the end that hopefully will make some diamonds on the other end.
I see the governor's put forward his budget proposal. I know the Freedom Caucus is criticizing that as for holding too much spending. Meanwhile, on the House side, it looks like Representative Lou Jones is kind of taking the lead on the budget proposal there. That has spending, you know, slightly lower than the governor's. Who's taking the lead in the Senate, and what's that look like?
Yes, our chair of Finance and Claims is Senator Glimm out of Kyla, Kalispell, Northwest area there. So he's really got the budget in his hands over here in the Senate, but we haven't got it yet. The House still has to. They just took their second reading vote. They got to do a third reading vote today, see how that goes, and send it over. But actually, the governor's proposed budget, I forgot the exact dollars, but he proposes it in November, and then that's what we take. It's a recommendation to us, and then the House gets their first bite at the apple. They've actually increased it quite a bit, at least for my liking anyway. So, I mean, legislature is somewhat to blame for the spending here, too. We'll have to see what happens here in the Senate, if we can hold back some of that spending or if it's going to stay at the level that it is.
Yeah, I know one of the key markers folks have looked at in the past is, okay, how does the spending track with population growth and inflation? And, of course, in previous administrations, those numbers have been greatly out of whack. What would it look like this session, given the proposals that are out there right now? I know that's something a lot of folks will be looking at. Okay, more to follow with Senate President Matt Regeer right after this quick break right here on Montana Talks, and then the Democrat House Minority Whip after that, and then open phones for the second half.
If you tied the knot last year, you may find that you're paying more in taxes. I'm Jenny Cosola with your Fox Business Tax Tip coming up.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
When married, your filing status is determined based on your marital status for the last day of the year or December 31st. Typically, dual-income households pay more in taxes married due to the so-called marriage penalty. CPA Bill Dendy says the penalty is no longer relevant for most couples.
The marriage penalty used to be the high difference in between standard deductions if we were single or married. Currently, standard deduction for a single taxpayer is $14,600 and standard deduction for a married couple is $29,200. Exactly twice that amount.
Jenny Cosola, Fox News.
tackling the issues that shape our state. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, sir, I had fun catching up with Senate President Matt Regeer a little bit more during the break there as well. I was very pleased to hear President Regeer say that he believes that the state Senate will move more towards a flat tax direction with regard to income tax relief. I was really pleased to hear that because, you know, I'd hate to see a missed opportunity on that front, especially since there's a big budget surplus right now, once again, in Helena. President Regeer, property taxes, it seemed like we were, you know, the legislature was on track. It seemed like everybody was pretty much in agreement of you know, basically a homestead tax exemption, you know, reduction, shall we say, for property taxes. But now it looks like things are kind of shifting around. What are you hearing on that front?
Yeah, and I don't know if, I mean, it had a lot of momentum that came out of the governor's task force in the summer here. And so it had momentum, but I wouldn't say everybody was totally on board. There was a lot of question marks from the start, but there's just become more question marks as the process has gone through here, and that bill, the homestead constant property, has just gotten tougher and tougher and got amended and amended. It creates a whole bunch of different tax categories within Class 4, which is residential. You've got a different rate for the median value, up to like four times the median value, and then between four and six, the median value is a different rate, and then above six is another rate. And there's a problem too. Billings, the city of Billings, we're from, has in their charter, you can't float the mills. And that bill relies on the city and counties being able to float the mills. So it'd be, I've heard, up to $7 million hit to the city of Billings. They wouldn't be able to collect that. I don't even know how the city would do that. So there's questions like that, collateral damage, if you will, if we pass that bill. And the big one for me is it'll tax Montanans with second homes. If you have short-term rentals that you're trying to make a living on that, or if you just got the cabin in the woods that grandpa grandma built and gave it to the kids, those taxes are going to go up 40-50% on Montanans' second homes. So we could actually be taxing Montanans out of their second homes, which to me is a non-starter.
Yeah, I don't have a second home. I wish I did. Maybe someday, right? Especially as I get up there in years, closer to retirement, maybe give something for the kids. But to me, it would be outrageous to think that anybody would get a tax hike. We've got a budget surplus. Like, we can afford property tax relief. We can afford income tax relief. We don't need to pay for it by jacking up anybody's taxes, right? Like, instead, like, let's trim the state government spending, if that's what it's really going to come down to.
And that's the other element. You're absolutely right there, that we don't talk about enough. And that is, and I put that blame on a lot of us here at the legislature. We come in with ideas that, even though they're good ideas, but they cost $5 million here or $20 million. And it's like, guys, these all adds up. Even if it's a good idea, it's that we have to think efficiency first. And we don't always do that. And we haven't done that this session. There's been a lot of spending added on to the governor's budget. I'd like to just go back to the governor's proposed budget. Really, I just take that and put that in House Bill 2 and move forward. But unfortunately, that's not where we're at. And I think spending and the efficiencies need to be part of that equation.
You know, I mentioned it in the open of the show. You know, these liberal judges like this guy in Missoula, they can't even figure out which bathroom to use. What else are they getting wrong? This is just outrageous. Here we go. The bill was just signed into law by Governor Greg Gianforte. A massive support for protecting women's safe spaces. It's not just about protecting women's bathrooms from men entering the bathrooms. It's about protecting locker rooms. It's about protecting women's in women's prisons. It's about protecting women in women's shelters, so some dude can't come in there and violate their safe space there either. And here we go, already a liberal judge already abusing his power on the bench to stop it.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. It's there's some good judges here in Montana. I've met them, talked with them, and they want to be nonpartisan and see things just as the law is written. So I'm not going to, but there are a few bad apples like this that stand up and it's like you're in the wrong branch of government. If you want to be an activist and push your political agenda, run for the legislature. We need to, and unfortunately that part of too, part of what happened here in the Senate, we had a judicial reform was high on our list. We've hyped it a bunch, and now we've got just a handful of Republicans that have turned their backs on that this session, and most of the priorities there, just some common sense priorities, have fallen to the wayside.
Yeah,
because of
I don't get that. All these legislators who are working hard, sacrificing time away from their families, why would judicial reform? Why can't Republicans unite around that? Even on the House side, there's still Republicans that are blocking judicial reform. Like, you're basically throwing all of your own work in the trash can.
Yeah. It's I know politics is a dirty word sometimes, and this is one of the reasons why. And for me too, it's instead of just taking a look at the content and the merit of the bill and what we're trying to do, which a lot of people were on board with coming into this session, all of a sudden personal things and deals have taken the front seat, and that's unfortunate.
Yeah, you're I think a little younger than me, but do you remember the song by Third Eye Blind back in the 90s, How's It Gonna Be? And there's a line in there when they say, what are we fighting for? And that's my question to some of these Republicans. It's like, okay, you got your Medicaid expansion, the censure motion passed. What are you fighting for? What are you still fighting over? I don't get it.
Yeah, that's a good song. Go back to the 90s. Great decade of music for sure.
But it's throwback Thursday.
And you know what? And really, it comes down to the voters. I say all everybody out there in Montana, just really vet your candidate. Ask them tough questions. Even if you know them and you like them personally, and there's a lot of good people here that I like personally, but why are you voting that way? Like, no, let's go fishing.
It's about accountability. During the session as well, it's about accountability. All right, thanks. Stand by. Did you?
Montana Talks, uniting the Treasure State, one conversation at a time. Here's your host, Aaron Flint.
Yeah, I was chatting with Senate President Matt Regeer during the break there, because I wanted to just take advantage of every minute we got here. You definitely want to give equal time to the Senate president from the Republican side, then of course the Democrat House Minority Whip, who's going to join us here in just a second. But I had to get his take. I said, you know, I was talking off air earlier this morning with our friend David Noble, who's got his Twitch TV podcast. He's an attorney for his day job, but he fills in for me on the show, always does a great job. But we were joking earlier this morning. We're like, you know, everybody jokes about, well, they don't joke about it. It's not really a laughing matter, but they talk about the Uniparty in Washington, D.C. And we were like, man, is there a Uniparty in Helena? David, he must have, I forget what the headline he was responding to. I think it was something regarding a vote on a budget bill. It must have been a budget bill vote. David was like, I'm trying to figure out what's going on here, because there was this vote. Half the Republicans voted for it. Half the Republicans voted against it. And same thing with the Democrats. Half the Democrats voted for it. Half the Democrats voted against it. He's like, is there even a difference in the parties right now? Let's throw that question to it. So anyway, President Regeer kind of laughed a little bit on that one. And he said, it's just, this is an odd session. That's for sure. Representative Jonathan Carlin, great to have you back on this show. I'm assuming that must have been some budget vote that David was referring to.
Hey, Aaron, thanks for having me. Good to be with you. And I would assume he is referring to that, because we had House Bill 2, which is the state budget. We had that on the House floor all day yesterday. We spent about 8 hours voting on the budget and voting on amendments.
What's your take on the budget? Well, first, that bigger picture kind of question. I mean, it's just kind of odd, isn't it, you got half the Republicans voting for it, half voting against it. Same thing on the Democrat side of the aisle. But big picture for the budget, I saw, you know, the governor, of course, released his budget proposal last, what, November. I saw the conservative Freedom Caucus, is criticizing the governor, saying that spends way too much. I think Lou Jones on the Republican side is crafting kind of the House Republicans budget proposal that's a little bit less spending than the governor's one. My assumption is neither of those are enough from your standpoint. Where are the Democrats coming at on this budget debate?
Yeah, it's a great question. I voted for the budget. I think about 18 of my colleagues out of 42 did not vote for the budget. And, you know, I actually view that as a good thing. And I think we all represent different constituencies. We all represent different parts of the state. And I think we all go into the budget with different priorities. And I felt that for me, is the budget perfect? No. But I feel like it represents enough to me, compromise between both parties. We were able to make several amendments to the budget in committee that I think, you know, bolster education, they bolster health care in our state. So I felt like it was a reasonable compromise that would do good for my constituents. But again, we all come at it from different perspectives. And I do want to say for the public, they can go, if they go on the legislature's website, there's great tools where they can look at different aspects of the budget. They can even see different projects where they're being funded. And so the public can also make their own determination on it.
Yeah, in fact, speaking of budgets and spending, you know, obviously you guys are looking at a big budget surplus in Helena once again, and how to divvy that up. The governor already earlier this week signed into law, as I understand it, an increase for K-12 public schools, and the governor referring to it as a historic funding increase for public schools. And that's a Republican governor.
Yeah, you know, where I guess where I kind of laugh sometimes at historic is, of course, it's historic over the last biennium because, you know, we're also just trying to keep pace with inflation. So, you know, that was another, you know, strongly bipartisan bill to help our schools keep up with inflation. I think they need more. We've got some of the lowest paid teachers in the country. But, you know, I'm grateful that he did sign that into law because, to me, funding schools should not be a partisan issue.
One of the things, and I don't know, former Governor Brian Schweitzer, of course, the former Democrat Governor Brian Schweitzer, always had fun having him on the radio, taking phone calls as well. And, you know, he always talked about having a little grain left over in the bin and keeping some money left in the bank. And, you know, of course, Governor Gianforte in his first term, they paid down all the debt for the state. And he's also, you know, looking at keeping some grain left over in the bin. How much grain should be left in the bin?
So it's a great question, and I totally agree that, you know, we do want to be, you know, fiscally responsible. We have budget stability counts. You know, the state's doing well right now fiscally. I think that what we need to look at going forward, more so than leaving how much of like a one-time surplus we're leaving, I think we need to look at when it comes to tax policy, that if we cut ongoing revenues too drastically, what we risk is in 2 years or in 4 years, you know, if we face a recession, I mean, just look at the stock market today. If we face a recession, we want to be in a point where we're not having to cut government. And so that's why, like, my approach to like the income tax debate is that I'd rather be more conservative, not do too drastic an income tax cut, so that we know that in 2 years or in 4 years we're going to have enough to focus on things like property tax, fund our schools. And so I agree that we need money left over. It's hard for me to give you an exact dollar amount. It's very complicated with different funds.
Yeah, you talk about not wanting to cut any money from government. Oh, why not? Is there, there's nothing you could see that could be trimmed down or some cost savings that could be passed on to the Montana taxpayers? Yeah, I mean, you mentioned inflation. Well, we got hammered by inflation during the Biden regime. I mean, you know, Montanans have lost, you know, thousands of dollars a year as a result of the inflation over the last 4 years.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that there's areas that can be, I don't even say cut, I want to say streamlined, because, you know, I think in any organization there's going to be some degree of waste in areas that we can streamline. And I think that actually the Appropriations Committee has done a really good job of really kind of holding agencies' feet to the fires and saying, well, how many positions do you need for this? And so I totally agree that we want government to run efficiently. What I don't want to compromise is on service to my constituents. You know, I want to make sure that when my constituents have a problem, they need to contact an agency, that they're going to be able to get somebody on the phone. And so I actually think we've done a good job of holding government accountable and keeping government at a size that serves the constituents without being bloated.
Well, in one area, I would agree that we need some, you know, that, you know, unfortunately, we're going to need some more spending, some more investment from the state is, you know, we've got to expand our prison capacity. And it sounds like that's been a big topic of conversation once again here in the last week or so. And then, you know, on top of that, I mean, mental health care just got demolished under the last administration before Governor Gianforte took the helm. And so they've got some rebuilding to do on that front as well.
Yeah, that's a great point on in terms of a good example of why I think we need to really be fiscally responsible, because in 2017, bad fire season, the state had to cut and mental health got cut. And so I know that, you know, in our and I would say it's been bipartisan, actually, in trying to rebuild our mental health system, particularly focusing on community-based care. So, you know, if somebody needs mental health support, rather than having to send them to one centralized facility, you know, allow them to get care in their communities where they have family. And again, and I've been really pleased. Again, I think overall it's been bipartisan recognition that this is a big issue.
That's one of the stories that you know, always comes out of the legislative session and, frankly, out of Congress as well. I mean, I remember working for former Senator Conrad Burns, and, you know, yeah, you would disagree on some of the big stuff that was big in the news with, you know, with then a Democrat Senator Max Baucus. But there were a whole bunch of things, just day-to-day housekeeping stuff that we worked together with the other office on all the time. And same thing in Helena. In fact, when I was chatting with President Regeer out of Kalispell during the break, he was laughing. He said, I just saw a bill where Representative Lucas Schubert, this young man conservative out of the Flathead, is teaming up on a bill with, I think it's Mary Cafaro, a Democrat out of the Helena area. So you'll get those cats and dogs combinations from time to time, more often than people think.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, sometimes there's so much politics up here. I'm like, you know, if we just focus on what do we think is best for the people we represent, I find that there's actually a great deal of common ground there. And, I, you know, I will say one thing I know we've talked about a lot over the last several weeks is on property taxes, and I heard President Regeer talking a little bit about it, but I would say we're hitting some potentially choppy water there. And I think this is a good time for Montanans to reach out to their legislators and saying, you know, we want real long-term property tax reform, because we're kind of getting to the end here, and we've had a couple of bills get tabled just yesterday by Senate Tax Committee.
I was going to say, yeah, we brought that up with Regeer as well. I have a similar concern, because it seemed like everybody was kind of on the same page, where you had, you know, the governor and both parties in the legislature basically agree on a homestead exemption, but now there's talk of potentially increasing taxes on second homes. Now, I don't have a second home, but frankly, when we're sitting on a budget surplus, to me, there's no reason anybody should face a tax hike right now. And so yeah, maybe our listeners need to flood the phone lines in Helena to say, hey, everybody, get back on the same page when it comes to this homestead property tax relief.
I mean, the way I see it is that, and I agree with you, in that we need to focus on, for the folks that live here, that work here, reducing their tax rate, because what I want is that when they open their property tax bill, I want them to see a lower number. And there's different ways that we can get to that goal, but if legislators, I think, get distracted by rebates, for example, I think we're going to end up right back. I think in 2 years, it's going to be a lot worse. And so I think we need structural reform. We have the bills to do it, but it seems like some folks just want a rebate, which I feel like is just a Band-Aid on a big wound.
All right. Jonathan Carlin, Representative Jonathan Carlin, the House Democrat Minority Whip in the Montana House of Representatives. About 20 seconds to go. Anything else you want to tell folks across Montana?
Gosh, you know, I will tell them this is a really key part of the session here these last few weeks. And so I think that if they've been thinking about making a call or sending an email or sending a text to their legislator, whether it's about taxes or something else, now is the time to do it. And I will say the feedback I get is so helpful. I sometimes on the floor and looking through my emails and it really does help me. So I think folks should keep on reaching out.
All right. Well, we appreciate you joining us here once again for the weekly update. Maybe next Thursday, maybe we'll see if we can do it in person in the Capitol. I'll keep you posted on that front if I can make that happen. All right, quick break, and then we've got the phone lines open for you here in the second half of the show. 294-0970.
This is where Montana talks at with Lane Nordlund.
Yesterday, President Donald Trump announced sweeping new reciprocal tariffs aimed at reviving U.S. manufacturing and addressing global trade imbalances. The move includes a minimum 10% tariff on imports from at least 60 countries, with higher rates for China at 34%, Japan 24%, and the EU at 20%, and a 25% tariff on all imported automobiles. Trump said the tariffs support U.S. farms and ranchers hurt by unfair trade barriers, highlighting high tariffs on U.S. dairy exports to Canada and beef restrictions from Australia. He claimed the policy would generate trillions in revenue, reduce the national debt, and pressure countries to open markets. Numerous countries impose tariffs and non-tariff trade barriers on American beef that inhibit opportunities to export high-quality U.S. beef products into their or other countries. Australia sold roughly $29 billion to American consumers last year. Meanwhile, the U.S. was not able to sell a dollar of fresh U.S. beef in Australia. Vietnam places a 30% tariff on U.S. beef, while Australian beef faces no such tariff. Thailand places a 50% tariff on U.S. beef. Brazil and Paraguay, which have a history of dangerous foot-and-mouth disease, but despite overwhelming evidence of their animal health risk, the Biden administration continued to allow U.S. market access to Brazil and Paraguay. That is now on hold. The European Union also places numerous non-scientific Green Deal restrictions on American beef, limiting market access. I'm Lane Nordblond.
From Mondakistan to the Flathead, Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Tariffs are bad. Tariffs are awful. Why are you okay with everybody else putting tariffs on us then? That's my big rant of the day today, which is like all of these never Trumpers out there, all of these folks, tariffs are awful. Why would you do tariffs? Well, why don't you guys say that about all of these other countries and all of their tariffs on us? Kyle, Taiwan, 64% tariffs, and they're our friends. Japan, 46%, they're our friends. Switzerland, 61%. Indonesia, 64%. Cambodia, 97%. South Africa, 60%. Bangladesh, 74%. Madagascar, 93%. This list is just crazy. Absolutely crazy of all of the tariffs that are charged to the United States. The president put out the full list here yesterday. The National Cattlemen's Beef Association, I don't know if you guys saw this or heard about this yet this morning, but they put out a statement on the White House reciprocal tariff announcement. And this full statement was shared by President Trump's Rapid Response 47 team on X. They've got a great, if you follow Rapid Response 47 on X, great information that they churn out all day, every day. But they actually shared this statement from the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. Today, National Cattlemen's Beef Association Senior Vice President of Government Affairs Ethan Lane issued a statement after attending President Donald J. Trump's reciprocal tariff announcement at the White House. Because I saw some of these never-Trumpers complaining about tariffs. Never complains about tariffs any other time of year, any other year. Tariffs against our ranchers, tariffs against our manufacturers, tariffs against our products. Never see the guy complain about that, but oh, he's going to complain that Trump's going to do reciprocal tariffs. Here's what Ethan Lane with NCBA said. He says, for too long, America's family farmers and ranchers had been mistreated by certain trading partners around the world. President Trump is taking action to address numerous trade barriers that prevent consumers overseas from enjoying high-quality, wholesome American beef. NCBA will continue engaging with the White House to ensure fair treatment for America's cattle producers around the world and optimize opportunities for exports abroad. NCBA then gave this background about how numerous countries impose tariff and non-tariff trade barriers on American beef that inhibit opportunities to export our high-quality product. Australia sold roughly $29 billion of beef to American consumers. Meanwhile, we haven't been able to sell $1 of fresh U.S. beef in Australia due to non-scientific barriers. I know, crikey, right? Vietnam places a 30% tariff on U.S. beef, while Australian beef faces no such tariff. Thailand, 50% tariff on U.S. beef. Didn't hear any of these never-Trumpers complain about those guys tariffing us and our beef. And then, of course, you got Brazil and Paraguay. History of dangerous foot-and-mouth disease, but despite overwhelming evidence of their animal health risk, the Biden administration says, no problemo. Those are my words, not the NCBA words, by the way. The Biden administration said, no problemo, continued to allow U.S. market access to Brazil and Paraguay. I don't speak Portuguese, or I would have figured out how to say no problem in Portuguese as well. The European Union places numerous non-scientific Green Deal restrictions on American beef as well. So that's our friends in Europe. I saw somebody say, why are we tariffing our friends? Why are our friends tariffing us? You know, I mean, that's the real question here. But Newt Gingrich, former Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich, he was on with Sean Hannity last night. And the professor gave very interesting history.
Look, the fact is, if you watch the president today, in what I thought was historically one of his more important performances, he laid out, this is what they do to us. This is how they block us in Australia. We can't sell beef. This is how they block us in Japan and South Carolina and South Korea. We can't sell rice. This is how Japan blocks us from selling cars. You go down the list and say, yeah, it makes perfect sense that the United States has the right to protect the largest market in the world from being ripped off. And you're exactly right. People are going to show up, and they're going to start saying, okay, if I eliminate this and you get to come and sell stuff, can we work out a better deal? And that's exactly what Trump wants. But he also has a deep instinct here. One, build factories in America for national security reasons and for quality of life and income reasons. Two, make sure that you actually start shifting the tax burden back onto tariffs. Now, prior to 1913, when they passed the income tax, tariffs were the primary source of revenue for the United States for its entire first 150 years. And they raised plenty of money. Jefferson said proudly in his second inaugural, there was not a single internal revenue agent because all their money came from tariffs. So Trump is actually returning us to a very successful American model that created the biggest industrial society in the world.
All right, an industrial society that has practically been demolished across this country. If you've ever visited any of the so-called Rust Belt states, listen to what one auto worker union member had to say. This was an auto worker union member who was at the White House yesterday, and I know we got folks in, you know, the union stronghold of Butte listening right now. Listen to this auto worker.
I have watched my entire life. I have watched plant after plant after plant in Detroit and in the metro Detroit area close. There are now plants sitting idle. There are now plants that are underutilized. And Donald Trump's policies are going to bring product back into those underutilized plants. There's going to be new investment. There's going to be new plants built. In 6 months or a year, we're going to begin to see the benefits. I can't wait to see what's happening 3 or 4 years down the road. Thank you, Mr. President.
Yeah, it's about building things in America again. It's about high-wage jobs, high-wage manufacturing jobs, and having the wealth here in America, the wealth that's been offshored, the wealth that's been offloaded, and bringing that back here to America. It's also about having American products. I mean, like here in Montana, we love our Montana products. We love if there's a Montana connection on a really good product. This was really cool. Yesterday, I was telling you guys about this this product for the first time. It's called Power Plus Pain Aid. Yeah, I met this guy, Lee. Great guy, Marine Corps veteran. We were telling airborne stories and more during Trump's inauguration back in Washington, D.C., is where I got to meet Lee with some other Montana friends. And he was telling me about how he created basically his own energy drink. It's not just energy. It also gives vitamins to help relieve pain. And this was really cool. So earlier this morning, I was chatting with Dr. Al Olszewski out of the Flathead. And, you know, so here's a doctor sitting in my studio. And he sees this box of the Power Plus Pain Aid product sitting right here, and he looks at the back of the box, and he's looking at the at the ingredients. He's like, "Oh yeah." He's like, "Man, nothing there stands." You know how sometimes you'll pull up those energy drinks at the gas station, And you'd be like, oh, man, I could really use some energy right now. Maybe I'll get one. Whoa, what is in this thing? There's more chemicals and not with this stuff. The doc was looking it over. He's like, oh, yeah, it's got niacin. It's got the vitamin B6. It's got turmeric powder. And so that must be why my neck isn't so stiff after I take the Power Plus Pain Aid. You can, too. You can get it right now. For all of our Montana Talks listeners, here's what you do. You get 15% off. Go to drinkpowerplus.com, drinkpowerplus.com, and then use the code FLINT15, FLINT15 at checkout, and you get 15% off your Power Plus Pain Aid. Good stuff. It's got your vitamins in there along with a little bit of energy as well. It's kind of like a pre-workout, but with vitamins. That's the way I see it. All right, back to talking about products. You know, we were talking about abandoned factories and, you know, the rust belt. And, you know, another thing Laura Ingraham said last night, she's like, we've already been in a trade war. We've been in a trade war for the last 50 years, except for we've been the ones who've been attacked and we've never reciprocated. We've never responded. And now President Trump is doing that. He's responding. He's reciprocating. And already you're seeing some of these trading partners say, oh, okay, well, we told Trump that if he does away with his tariffs, yeah, we'll do away with ours. Yeah, go for it then. What are you waiting for? Do it. That's the whole point. I think we are going to start to see more of that. But speaking of abandoned factories, wow, what a powerful video that was put out. Lori Chavez de Remer is the labor secretary, the new labor secretary appointed by President Donald J. Trump. And she put out a powerful video talking about the abandoned factories and how it's a sad reminder of years of failed policies that put the American worker last. I'll play that for you right after this. And then I think we've got a good, oh, for Pete's sake moment. I'll tell you about two.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Ah, yes, I think this is today's Oh for Pete's Sake moment. Gotta be today's Oh for Pete's Sake moment. How long have we been talking about the need for more federal law enforcement on our reservations? I know what you're thinking. Oh, Aaron's going to go back on this Tren de Aragua Mexican drug cartel rant. Okay, let's just put that off. Let's put that aside. Let's ignore that. Let's just pretend that didn't happen. Or let's do what the liberal media does and just ignore the connection to missing and murdered indigenous persons cases and how there could potentially be drugs and cartel activity that also then causes all sorts of other problems, right? Okay, so how many times have you heard media sources in Montana wax poetic about missing and murdered indigenous women, and now it's missing and murdered indigenous persons? And I made the point on the show yesterday. So the Montana Free Press, which is a, you know, liberal news source, but still has some, you know, interesting reporting. They did this big story about how President Trump, they did a big story like 3 days ago about, you know, tribal leaders, everybody's talking about the need for more federal law enforcement on reservations. And there's been community protests in Poplar and Wolf Point calling for an end to the violence. And the point that I made on the show yesterday is that basically Joe Biden and John Tester surged the drug cartels and the drugs onto the reservations. Trump is now deporting the criminal illegal aliens, and he's surging law enforcement in. And so anyway, so three or four days ago, I think it was, the Free Press does this big article about, hey, they need more law enforcement on the reservations. And then like 2 days after that, the big news comes out of the U.S. Attorney's Office. that they're doing just that. President Trump's Attorney General Pam Bondi, FBI Director Kash Patel, President Trump's newly appointed acting U.S. Attorney Kurt Almy here in Montana. They're surging FBI resources into Indian country to go after not just missing and murdered indigenous persons cases, but all of the thousands of open investigations across the country, in Indian country, right? And so, you know, the liberal Montana Free Press did a little article about that big news. And the Montana Television Network, the Scripps TV stations, they did a report about this big news. Not once, somebody on their Facebook pages pointed this out, and I was like, oh, for Pete's sake. And then I went and read the article. I was like, God, the guy's right. There was a comment on one of their Facebook pages says, they were like, you did this entire story without once mentioning President Trump or anybody on his team. So they did this big story about how, you know, Crow Nation victims' families are hopeful that the FBI surge will bring about justice on the reservation. They did a whole story about, hey, look at the FBI is going to surge all these resources into Indian country. Not once in the article did they mention the presidential team that's making this happen, which is Donald J. Trump, his Attorney General Pam Bondi, newly confirmed FBI Director Kash Patel, who joined us on this show last summer, and then working with and through the U.S. Attorney's Office and U.S. Attorney Kurt Almy on the ground here in Montana. Nowhere does it mention any of those guys. It's like, hey, how do we do a story about the big news, about the good news about law enforcement being surged on a reservation, but how do we make sure we don't say it's about Trump? Because we just have to bash Trump all day long. We can't say anything that might make him look good to our viewers. I mean, that's what it looks like. I don't know if that was the intent of this reporter or not. I think maybe this reporter was just trying to localize a very big, good national news story. But again, like when all you see is orange man bad, orange man bad, orange man bad, orange man bad, and then they have a good news story about what orange man doing, and they don't mention orange man at all. You know, it's just like, oh, for Pete's sake. That's why it's today's oh, for Pete's sake moment. My Norwegian Lutheran grandma taught me how to cuss on the high line. So oh, for Pete's sake is what you say after you see stuff like this in the news. On that front, though, yeah, I sent out a post on X yesterday. One of the biggest stories of the week. This literally is one of the biggest stories of the week, and yet look at how it's getting poo-pooed in the press. Poo-pooed in the liberal press here in Montana. One of the biggest stories of the week, the Trump administration is surging federal law enforcement to Indian country. Biden surged cartels and drugs onto the reservations. Trump is deporting the criminal illegals and surging law enforcement in. Oh, the other thing about this story. The other thing about this MTN story. So they couldn't quote the U.S. attorney. They couldn't quote the FBI director. They couldn't quote the AG. But you know who they did quote? The MMIP community organizer in Billings. The same person who showed up protesting the deportation of these criminal illegal aliens when that protest was at the Metro. So the same person who claims to be concerned about missing and murdered indigenous persons also wants to keep the illegal aliens in this country that are, you know, like the drug cartels that are targeting Native American women in particular. But, oh, yeah, yeah, quote that person instead of the official.
How serious is youth vaping? Irreversible lung damage serious? 1 in 10 kids vape serious? Which warrants a serious conversation from a serious parental figure like yourself. Not the seriously know-it-all sports dad or the seriously smart podcaster. It requires a serious conversation that is best had by you. No, seriously. The best person to talk to your child about vaping is you. To start the conversation, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Coming up on the Thursday edition of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show, it is the day after Liberation Day. How are the markets reacting to the tariff situation? We have to let President Trump continue to be Trump and focus on what the long-term benefits could be. We'll discuss. We also will be joined by Senator Marsha Blackburn of Tennessee. We'll ask her about a lot of things, including border security, coming up on Clay and Buck. Montana.